Hey friends, are you ready to elevate your personal or business brand with a professionally self-published book? And you've tried to start, but you're not sure where to go or what to do. Or maybe you did get started, but you keep getting repeatedly stuck in the same place time and time again. Well, I work with thought leaders, executives, and speakers just like you to write and self-publish their book with confidence. If you've been burned by bad advice, overwhelmed by the fire hose of self-publishing information, or don't know where to turn, then listen in to Self-Publishing for Professionals for straightforward, actionable guidance without the fluff. Then you can avoid the biggest and costliest mistakes authors make. Self-Publishing for Professionals is your roadmap to becoming a published thought leader. Hi, friends and future authors. This is Lynn Liquidy back for another episode of Publishing for Professionals. I hope you are enjoying your summertime because, as we know, it is the middle of summer when this is going to be published. I am super excited to bring you to another episode. Thank you for listening to today's episode. I have a guest expert on. I'm super excited to introduce him in just a minute. But before we jump into today's show, I want to give a big welcome back to my returning listeners. Thanks for joining me again. And another big welcome to my new listeners. Make sure you hit that like and subscribe button wherever you are watching or listening to this so that you can get every episode dropped to your podcast player every week. I'm so glad that you stopped by. Today, I have a great guest and an incredible conversation to line up for you. I'm joined by John Dedakis. He is a former editor on CNN's Situation Room with Wolf Blitzer, which if you are a Gen Xer like me, you totally remember that show. Dedakis is also the author of 6 novels in the Lark Chadwick Mystery Suspense Thriller series. In his most recent book, Enemies Domestic, Lark is a White House press secretary forced to make her deeply personal abort or not to abort decision in a highly toxic, polarized political fishbowl, all while dealing with an attack on the presidency. Dedakis is a former White House correspondent, a writing coach, manuscript editor, podcaster, and teaches novel writing at literary centers and writer conferences nationwide. He's here with us today to share his expertise on the process of weed whacking and how to shorten your book when your content is just too long. So this episode is going to provide you with some valuable insights. So John, thank you so much for joining me today.
Oh, you're welcome, Lynn. Thank you.
I'm really excited to chat about this because I have talked to so many people who say, like, I have this book and I wrote it, but it's just too long. But before we jump into your process, I want to first ask you, because weed whacking is your term. Before we specifically ask you about weed whacking, I know some people who are listening to this may want to self-publish their book, or they may want to do a traditional hybrid publisher. But no matter what route you take, there are certain, quote unquote, I call it book board etiquette. Sometimes your book is too short, sometimes it's too long. And there's no really hard and fast rule, but what do you recommend for people who are writing a book who want to write like a memoir and or like a nonfiction book? What do you recommend as far as like an average word count that's a good one?
I think that the range of about 80,000 words is a good place to start. You can go a little under that. Most people tend to be wordy. If you're writing sci-fi or something like that, you're creating a new world. And so okay to go, you know, 100,000 or something like that. But when you start getting over 100,000 words and you're not a well-known author, it's a disincentive for people to want to read you or get you published because we live in an age of short attention span. And not to mention the fact that it is expensive to publish a book, to produce a book. Traditional publisher is less likely to want to take a risk on you if your book is going to be kind of bloated. I think it's wise to be disciplined and try to bring it in around 80 to 90,000 words.
And I know there's like, if you're not a professional writer, people tend to be extra wordy. They tend to like, I feel like if, when you're not a professional writer, and this happens, like if I tried to do something and I wasn't a professional at, I wouldn't be good at it either. But when you're not a professional writer and you're writing your book, people tend to over explain things that are easy to assume. He walked through the door into the room, or he walked through the door into the room, blah, blah, blah. But it's like, but if you say like he crept up to the door because there was a sound behind it, right? That's a totally different visual, but people tend to add more words than they need.
Absolutely. And I think there's a great anecdote. Mark Twain, I think it was, said, my letter would have been shorter, but I didn't have enough time.
Right. I know. Yeah. And the easy part, it's funny because you think writing more takes longer and it's actually actually harder to write shorter and concise content than it is to just write.
And I think part of it too is the writing process. There are seat of the pantsers and there are planners. And the seat of the pantsers especially tend to get really wordy. You know, they're just, you know, letting it flow. And that's wonderful for a first draft. But there comes a point where something's got to happen and you need to make it coherent. And so that means then that a right brain oriented seat of the pantser needs to put on their left brain editorial chops to be much more critical and disciplined about cutting and pasting and buffing and polishing.
Right. And I think too, because it's your own work, you're way too close to it to know what needs to be taken out to make it more professional and what needs to be left in to make it sound professional. And I never say should, because obviously people have their own personal feelings about what they want to have in their book and what they don't want to have in their book. But like you said, there's a lot to be considered when, especially I feel like you're right, people that are pantsers, and there's nothing wrong with being a pantser in writing, but right. It does take more editing on the back end.
Absolutely. And it's important to be cognizant of the fact that, you know, you need to be able to speak directly to the reader and not, I mean, I wrote a memoir and it hasn't been published yet. It's still being shopped. And it started first draft, 125,000 words, way too long. But that's the beauty of beta readers, because they're people who you don't have to pay to edit your work, but they love you. They're itching to get their hands on your writing to see how well you're doing. And you give them permission to tell them what's not working. And for the memoir that I wrote, it was so helpful for people to say, too many names. I don't know about these people. Are they important? This is where I started to fall asleep. This is boring. And I needed to hear that. It kills me to have to take out references to my best friends, but that's the hard part. But it's the beta readers and the editors who can give you the tough love that you need.
Right, right. And yeah, to your point too, when you're writing a book to publish it, you can write a book and publish it just for yourself. I mean, I know people who've done that, but most of the time when people are writing a book to publish it, they're writing it for other people to read it. So we want our books to be well-received. And in order to be well-received, we need to make sure that we're writing for our audience, not writing for ourselves.
Yes. I mean, it's both, but in the end, it's got to connect. Why are we writing? We're writing to connect with someone else. And you don't want to give them an opportunity or an excuse to turn out the light. You want them to turn the page. And that means that less is more. You want to entice and encourage and make them ask questions about what's going to happen next or what about this, as opposed to over-explaining. That's probably the biggest rookie mistake that there can be.
Yeah, absolutely. I see that too. Okay, so John, let's jump into weed whacking. So what is weed whacking and why do you offer weed whacking as one of your services?
this is a moment, because I've never talked about this in public before. We are blazing the trail. I mean, it's something I've been doing for a long time as a manuscript editor, but I don't think a lot of people do it. I'm a manuscript editor, a writing coach. I work with people on their draft. But one of the things that I discovered is that there are some people, especially memoirists, who have a compelling story to tell, and it's just too long. I've got clients who've written, you know, these memoirs that are 250,000 words or 150,000 words, way too frickin' long. And they're too close to it, as you said, to be objective about what to cut. So I created what I call my weed whacking service. You know, you give me your manuscript, and I'm working on a client's right now. It's 150,000, we're 155,000, and he's hired me to bring it down to 80,000. And I love doing this, because as a reporter in broadcast journalism, time is everything. I can remember a screaming argument I had in the newsroom with the assignment editor who piece was, it was supposed to be a minute 30. It was a minute 35. And we had this screaming argument about 5 seconds. And so you would be amazed at how you can cut, you know, you can cut your stuff down, and it actually makes it better because it's punchier. And so I love it when someone says, I only need 100 words for a bio or something like that. I can slash and burn and bring it in. And I love doing that. It's the buffing and polishing of it.
That's awesome. When you are weed whacking, what is your process? So obviously first you get the person's manuscript, and then And what are like typical questions you ask people when you're weed whacking with them?
I don't ask them questions. I mean, I read the manuscript. I mean, it needs to stand alone. I shouldn't have to ask them any questions. I certainly, in the one I'm working on now, there's probably a question I'm going to ask, probably say, I need to know this. Give me 50 words and so I can drop it in. The process is basically what's the overall, I go macro to micro. And this is not just for a weed whack. It's for, you know, your own rewriting process. Go macro to micro. It doesn't make sense. Let me back up. I'm going to talk about the rewrite process in general because most people do rewrite their own stuff. And so if you write your manuscript all the way through, that keeps your forward momentum going. It could take you 6 months, a year, 9 months, whatever, to write your first novel. My suggestion is the first thing to do in a rewrite is to read it. Read it as if it's a completed book. You already know what the gold standard is for a good book. Now read it to determine how close you come to reaching that standard. Resist the temptation to immediately dive in and start fixing stuff because you're going to find stuff to fix all over the place. But just let it wash over you and see it in its totality because this is the only time you're really going to see it objectively. From here on out, you're going to be in the weeds and you're going to get too close to be objective. It's macro to micros. The first question is, do I need to quit and start over? Do I need to rearrange it? Maybe it took too long to get started. Maybe the first chapter needs to be chapter 6. In your rewrite, you take chapter 6, put it to the front, tighten it up, and so on. And then you're going to a more deeper dive. You look at each chapter and ask yourself, you know, can I see what's going on? Am I engaging all the reader's sensory details? And then read the chapter again, going into a deeper, more microscopic dive on the word choices. Is this sentence as succinct as it can be? And then the final question to ask yourself on the next pass is, we're really getting granular now, is everything spelled correct? Because sure, I get it. You suck as a speller, but you're a professional writer and agents care about the details. Spelling is one of those details that separates the amateur from the professional. And so you want to make sure that it's pristine. And so you go macro to micro. Same principle for my weed whack. I'll read the whole thing to get a big picture idea of what it is. And then I'll try to figure out, do I need to rearrange things? Where are the things that can be cut completely? Where are the things that I'll be able to streamline and just be more efficient at it? And then I'll do that. And then I'll go back and make another pass that really starts to buff and polish and make it tighter as well. And I usually keep each draft separate so that I can see how it evolves. And so that if I cut something that I shouldn't have cut, I can go back and get it and bring it in.
That makes sense. Okay, my friends, we're going to take a break right here. When we come back, I'm going to ask questions, ask John about his process of weed whacking. So stay tuned, my friends. We will be right back. Are you looking to join a community of professionals who understand the challenges of writing a book? Then join my new community, Publishing for Leaders, where you can attend our Authors Brew Coffee Chat, get real support and advice from a professional writer and editor, and be with other authors who are writing their book right alongside you. The link is in the show notes below. Now let's get back to the show. Hey, friends and future authors. We are back with John Dedekis today talking about his process of weed whacking and how to make your novel shorter if it is too long. But before we jump into the second half, I just want to ask you to share this episode with a friend. If you know a friend who's writing a book, definitely share this with them so they can also get more on the topic of writing their book. All right, John. So I've got a couple of questions for you. One of the things I always recommend to my clients to do is when they are going back to read it, to either print the book, like actually print it on paper, and or read it out loud. And I want to get your professional opinion on those.
I agree with you about there shouldn't be should. Printing it out is fine. I don't do that because I don't like to kill trees. But I have heard from people who do print it out that doing so allows them to see it in a new light. It's sort of changing the prism a little bit and looking at it differently. I'm more of a fan of reading it out loud. And if you're in a coffee shop, fine, read it to yourself, you know, mouth the words, because it slows you down so that you're more likely to see the typos and you're going to get a sense of, oh, have I created tongue twisters? Is this not clear? Is it just you know, is a clunky feeling. So reading it out loud, I think, is a definite way to take a really important, close look at what you've written.
Yeah. And it's incredible how when you just read it in your head and read it out loud, you wouldn't think it would make a big difference, but it's a huge difference. Like, I was really surprised when I first started doing that years ago. I was like, huh, I had no idea. And one of the things I would catch myself on, like you say, like, you can tell where the words get clunky really easily when you read it out loud. And if you're reading it at a coffee shop, you can just read it to your screen, because most people are on meetings anyway. They do video meetings at coffee shops. So sure. No one would know the difference if you're on a video meeting or not.
I've also heard that I think there's an app that will read it to you.
Yes.
And so if you are hearing your book, that's another way, and follow along, or you can just listen, which is a good way to determine if it's going to put you to sleep or not. But, you know, read, hear it read out loud to you. And that's another way to hear the clunkiness or the problems.
Yeah. So there are a lot of places, like, I know Google Docs for sure has this. I'm pretty sure Microsoft Word has it, but it's under the accessibility tab, because I have hearing aids. So sometimes I have it read out loud to me. Reading it out loud through the accessibility tab on Google Doc, you don't even need a separate app. Or I think Word has it too, but there are other apps where you can put in your browser that it will read your text on your page out loud for sure. So that's super helpful. And then the other thing I wanted to ask you too is I always talk about a lot of different things people who aren't in publishing don't realize when they want to submit to an agent. So what you said earlier, that agents care about details and like grammar, of course, right? Like, because if they see a lot of misspelled words, they're going to know it wasn't professionally edited and they're going to immediately dismiss that manuscript. But what else besides just the spelling do you recommend to clients that they should really look at to make sure they don't have in their manuscript? Let's start about the things they should not have in their manuscript if they want to successfully publish with a publisher first.
I go to a lot of writers' conferences and I meet with a lot of agents. And probably the thing that was a real epiphany eye-opener for me was at a writers' conference where three agents were up at the front and they listened to the first page of an anonymously submitted manuscript. And their job was, the agents raised their hand at the point that they would be sending a rejection letter. This is the first page. Now, granted, in some cases, they allowed it to continue to spool out. But more often than not, in fact, there were two agents that were raising their hand at the same time. And then they explained why they were going to be sending a rejection. And more often than not, they started out great. I was really interested in this character. I was intrigued. I wanted to know more. You planted a few seeds that tantalized me and made me think that, oh, there's going to be more here. And then you started to do backstory. You took the story back 15 years and started to put context in and explanations. And it took me out of the moment. It took me out of the story. And I think that's the biggest rookie mistake that happened. There's nothing wrong with backstory, but you can sprinkle it in as your story goes forward. The most important thing is to get your characters talking to each other. Something needs to happen on that first page in order to hook the reader's interest. And in this case, they get 150 queries a day. They already know what's working and what's not. So you can't be the writer who says, you know, it really gets great on a page 100. They don't have time. And they're doing you a favor by rejecting it quick. Problem, of course, is the rejection only just says, not right for me. Good luck with your writing. All the more reason to go to a writer's conference and meet with agents and get some real-time feedback on what's not working, or get a beta reader. But backstory, big problem.
Yeah, no, for sure. I agree with that. And the thing is that they typically read the first 10 pages of your book. And yeah, like, you may feel bad that they rejected you, but that means that if they rejected you, most likely another publisher would. And so you need to really figure out, like, hey, where is my book going wrong? Where do I need to change it? I love that process of like, hey, they're reading it and then they raise their hand when they're like, nope, I wouldn't do it. Because then you know exactly the spot where you need to change and you need to go back in to change it, right? That's all part of the process of like redoing your book and re-editing. And I think a lot of people don't understand how like time consuming writing can be and how exhausting and tiring it can be sometimes. Because I think a lot of people idealize writing a book is like, you know, locking yourself in the cabin for like a month and writing your book. Whereas like, yeah, that sounds like all fun and games, but then you would actually publish it, right? Like, you need to have the beta readers and the marketing piece and all that. And so it does end up being a very time consuming work and putting a lot of your time and effort into it. And you don't always get the end result you want to either. So that's a whole nother piece that we're definitely not going to jump into today. So what would you recommend for people who are sitting here listening to this episode, John, and they're like, well, John, my book is really long and I've self-edited it once, but I don't know where to take more out. So like, what are some places you would suggest where people might take more out where they haven't thought of before?
I think that if you've done as much editing as you can, then it's time to bring in not necessarily even a professional editor. I think that beta readers, people who are already in your sphere of influence, these are the people, if you give them permission to tell you what's wrong with it, they're going to tell you it should be made into a movie and all that. Great. You need that kind of affirmation, but you also need their honest feedback of what, you know, where was the moment where they just didn't quite understand, where they were taken out of the story. That I think is critical. That kind of feedback is invaluable.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I agree with you 100%. Well, John, I know some of my listeners are going to want to get to know more about you and find out more about who you are. I've got, for YouTubers, I've got John's website up here. So John, do you want to talk about your website address, where people can find you for the audio podcast, and where can people find you and find out more about your books you've published?
Excellent. Thank you for that opportunity, Lynn. I'm at mynamedot.com, but because it's a tricky Greek name, I'll spell it for you. It's johndedakis.com. That's J-O-H-N, D as in dog, E, D as in dog, A, K-I-S as in Sam.com, johndedakis.com. It's got thumbnails of all my books and how to order them. They're on, you know, they're in print, they're on Kindle, they're audiobooks. There is a link to my upcoming classes, upcoming events, classes I teach online, the writers' conferences I'll be at, the retreats I'll be leading. There's a page about my motivational speaking. I work with the corporate wellness programs, bereavement groups, and such, helping people who are struggling with grief to use writing as a way to heal. It can be journaling, storytelling, memoir, all those kinds of things. What else? I've got the different editorial services that I do. And on just about every page, there's a portal that you can use to send me an email.
Awesome. And I love that writing for to process grief, because I think that's really important. Something in America we don't do enough of. People, I feel like employers in America is like, oh yeah, like someone really close to you just passed away, you should be back at work next week. It's like,
yeah,
how do
snap
you even
out
function?
Of it. Snap
yeah.
out of it.
Yeah. Yeah, and, yeah. And it's not a snap out of it thing. Like obviously if that person was close to you, they're a big part of you. The process takes a long time.
And it doesn't even have to be the loss of a loved one. It can be a pet, a job, your innocence, you know, any number of things.
That's true. Yeah. Because there's lots of things you can grieve, not just the passing of somebody. That is absolutely true. All right. Well, John, thank you so much again for coming on to Publishing for Professionals. I know my listeners got a lot of value out of this episode today.
Thank you, Lynn. This was fun.
All right, my friends. Well, you know, I love to work with new and repeat authors to write and edit their nonfiction books. So instead of using your time to write your book, hop on over to www.writeforyou.me to find out how I can assist you in writing your book. And if you're not sure where to start, jump on my website to book a discovery call today. I'm ready to stand by your side and walk you through the publishing process. Until next week, this is Lynn Aliquity reminding you to keep writing, keep dreaming, and keep creating. Your book is waiting to be born. Thanks for joining me today on the Self-Publishing for Professionals podcast. If you found the information on today's show valuable, be sure to subscribe and get the next episode dropped as soon as it's published. This podcast is brought to you by Unicorn Publishing Company. The information in this podcast is for educational and informational purposes only. The content shared by the host, guests, and affiliates is not intended to substitute for professional, legal, or financial advice or any professional advice specific to your situation. Always seek the advice of a qualified professional with any questions you may have. The opinions expressed on the show by the host or guests are those of the individuals and do not necessarily reflect the views of Unicorn Publishing Company. Unicorn Publishing Company, the host, guests, and affiliates are not responsible or liable for any decisions made by listeners or actions taken hereto based on the information discussed in this podcast. By listening to this podcast, you acknowledge and agree to release Unicorn Publishing Company, the host, affiliates, and guests from any liability.